KNOM Profiles.
The Smithsonian is working to return human remains to Shishmaref that were excavated over 80 years ago. The remains of an estimated 48 people will come back this summer, along with six funerary objects associated with burials. The National Museum of Natural History says that the remains of about 27 people were unearthed at the old village site of Shishmaref and near the current site in 1926. An archaeologist from the U.S. National Museum collected additional human remains from burial sites at Old Shishmaref in 1929. Dr. Lars Krutak is the repatriation case manager.
They came to be in our possession through a series, of archaeological excavations and also gifts, but they've largely stemmed from a non-indigenous fox trader, George Goshaw, who established a fox farm there, basically on the site of Old Shishmaref and part of its cemetery in the 1920s. And so he cleared away these sort of burial berms, little sand mounds where individuals were traditionally placed, and he cleared them to make room for his fox cages and basically where he was raising these Arctic foxes for the fur market. He sent several of the remains to us, and then we had Smithsonian archaeologists in the region in the 1920s, and he basically gifted them to these individuals, and that's how they came to be at the Smithsonian.
In addition to the human remains, six funerary objects will go back to Shishmaref.
So these would have been like everyday objects that traditionally would have been buried with men and women when they passed away. Objects that may have been used in the afterlife, once the spirit has migrated. So like scrapers, ivory bola weights, projectile points, that type of object. So sort of utilitarian objects that they believed that should accompany the individual in case that they could use them in afterlife.
Stanley Toktu is the Shishmaref IRA president. He will be going to Washington, D.C. to pick up the objects and remains this summer. The IRA and an elders committee are still figuring out what to do with the remains and objects.
We know this island's 4,000 years old, so it'd be nice to see our ancestors' hunting tools, survival tools, whatever they used during all four seasons, because we know Shishmaref is a subsistence community. We'd like to get most of the items back where ancestors use, to a museum, at least get them back to Alaska where they belong, so they won't be scattered all over the United States and we'll have no trace of what our ancestors used.
Toktu says that people continue to find old and delicate grave sites around Shishmaref.
We have another remain up there that just showed up on an old trail, so we've got to take care of that remain too. There's some remains that start popping up due to the sand blowing away. And I believe they buried them only a couple feet down a long time ago, so it's kind of funny to see these graves erode from the wind blowing the little sand dunes away, or traffic like four-wheelers or this kind of stuff. So we're keeping an eye out in the community so we don't disturb the grave site, or if we find them, we'll put a little mound and warn the community. So
the native villages of Gamble and Savunga will receive 72 funerary objects this summer. Dr. Krutak says that these are associated with people who died in the Great Famine of the late 1870s,
which were collected originally starting in the late 19th century on expeditions. There are also sailors or members of the Revenue Cutter Service who picked up remains when they landed on the island or when they were conducting their surveys, and then they found their way here as gifts to the Smithsonian. And then we also had excavations taking place in the 1920s, primarily by Henry Collins, who was a longtime curator of ethnology and archaeology here at the Smithsonian. So because of the large numbers of remains, and we're talking in the hundreds, and then funerary objects, which at that time hadn't been determined how many there were, they decided in the late 90s to break up the repatriations into sort of two segments. So they focused the report in the late 90s because that was the priority to get the remains back, a report focusing on those remains. And then we recently began trying to identify how many funerary objects from the various sites that were excavated over time, and then we determined that these 72 funerary objects, they all date to the historic period, typically to the Great Famine that depopulated much of the island between 1878 and 1880.
Researchers took 60 funerary objects at historic sites at Cape Gigliac on the southeastern end of the island in 1929. The Smithsonian also obtained 9 objects at historic sites on the Punic Islands.
There was a scientist working for the U.S. government in the 1870s, Henry Elliott, and he actually left us with some of the only drawings of people actually living there and inhabiting the islands in the 1870s. And he actually even described a burial locality there. So I drew heavily upon those accounts as well as other detailed documentation of sites through archaeological reports and other archival records that may have not been published to be able to affiliate these remains to St. Lawrence Island and also to particular villages that were more or less decimated by this epidemic or famine that took place between 1878 and 1880, which resulted in, you know, over 95% of the population of St. Lawrence Island sort of being decimated, and that sort of compelled the survivors to move to Gamble. There may have been 1,400 or 1,500 people living on the island just prior to that disaster, and only in the last 5 or 10 years has the population of the island basically return to that number.
The Smithsonian's records of the island's devastating famine come from interviews with elders from the early 1900s.
And they reported sort of climactic problems that sort of compelled the sea mammals to be further offshore than usual. So I think it was sort of a combination of several factors, but I think part of it was weather-related. And it just made it much more difficult for people to sort of get to the sea mammals. And it also had some effect on the ice flows and ice currents. So I think there was also difficulties in trying to harpoon bowhead whales. And so it was sort of a combination of different factors. It's just one of these tragedies that people that visited shortly thereafter, like U.S. Revenue Cutter Service captains and things like that, were just completely amazed at how empty the island was literally months after this tragic event.
Krutak says the museum's possession of the objects and remains are reminders of some of the darker periods in the Smithsonian's history, but he says the return of the objects can be a part of a healing process.
Times have definitely changed, thank goodness for that, and in some sense we're trying to sort of make amends for past wrongdoings, and so sort of mending these broken circles that took place in the past. And so that's the way I look at it. And whatever I can do to sort of, you know, heal some of these wounds, that's what it's all about for me at the end of the day as well. So, yeah, it's a difficult aspect of our museum's history that we have to deal with, but it's an important one, and we need to acknowledge it, and we need to, you know, try to heal, you know, people in any way that we can.
That was Dr. Lars Krutak from the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian. For KNOM Profiles, I'm Ben Matheson.
Profiles is a production of KNOM News and Public Affairs.